Dateline, Scottsdale, Arizona, Friday, February 19. Hello again, Orion Samuelson here for our weekly visit, and I think a fairly special broadcast because in addition to talking markets and focusing on South America, Brazil, and Argentina with Dr. Mike Cordonier, who is a close contact with the people in the industry down there, I'm also going to share with you the highlights of the Outstanding Young Farmer Awards Banquet that was held the middle of this month in Cincinnati, Ohio. From the 10 finalists, 4 were selected, and we're going to meet those 4 on this broadcast. But let's start by focusing on a day on Wall Street where the market ended very little changed. Applied materials helping lift the tech sector, offsetting a renewed drop in oil prices, and, believe it or not, major indexes capping their best week of the year. The NASDAQ ended higher, up by a 7% jump in applied materials shares after the chip equipment provider gave a strong profit and revenue forecast for the current quarter. The S&P 500 still down a little more than 6% this year, hurt by oil's prolonged slide and concerns of a China-led slowdown in the global economy. The performance of stocks slightly linked with that of oil. We've watched that for the past few months. And the price of oil fell 4% today as record-high crude stockpiles in the United States raised supply concerns, and the S&P energy sector ended down 0.4%. Some retail shares did poorly this week, too. Nordstrom down 6.7%. And yesterday, Walmart stores' lower sales outlook had weighed on the stock market. So for the week, though, we did see a good week on Wall Street. The end of the session today saw the Dow Industrial Average at 16,392, a loss of 21 points for the day. The S&P 500 ended at 1917 and call it unchanged. The NASDAQ composite up 16 points for the day at 4504. The agribusiness industry hit by the lower commodity prices with a sharp drop in corn and soybean prices particularly. And as a result, we continue to see agribusiness companies suffer with the lower commodity prices. From just about anything provided for agriculture, CF Industries profit misses estimates and its prices weaken. That's the U.S. nitrogen fertilizer producer based in Deerfield, Illinois. And then today, John Deere issued its quarterly earnings report and cut its fiscal year sales and profit outlook, reported lower quarterly earnings. The maker of John Deere tractors said it now expected farming and construction equipment sales to drop 10% in the year ending this coming October. They earlier had forecast a decline of 7%. The Department of Agriculture, though, has forecast the nation's net farm income at $54.8 billion this year. That's down from $123 billion in 2013. Well, we're going to meet two of the nation's 4 outstanding young farmers recently honored this month when we continue with the markets sponsored by CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
The first outstanding young farmer at the 2016 awards program, Jessica Niederer. once again pointing out that I think women are playing an increasingly important role in agriculture. Congratulations to you, Jessica.
Thank you very much.
What started your interest in agriculture?
I grew up on the farm where I currently lease land from my dad. So it was a relationship with our farm, with the land. After a while, I also just really wanted to have a career that benefited people. And agriculture was a great fit. Also allowed me to stay outside.
Okay, and what produce do you provide for America?
We grow over 50 different varieties of vegetables on my farm. So that's everything from arugula to zucchini. We have a diverse selection every week of the year that we supply to customers directly at farmers markets.
So how do you market and where do you market your produce?
We go to 6 farmers markets a week throughout the summer months in Princeton, Montgomery, Rutgers Gardens, Westfield, and Denville. So in the winter months, it's wherever they have the indoor winter farmers markets.
So from the standpoint of education, how did you prepare yourself for a career in agriculture?
Yes, a good question. I got a degree in ecology from Cornell University, and all farmers need to be pretty up and up on ecology because much of what we do depends on soil health. And then I worked on farms in order to learn how to farm.
And introduce your friend.
This is Kevin Riley, who is a very supportive person behind the scenes.
Kevin, what do you do?
Well, I work as a nurse in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
And any relation to agriculture before that?
Before that, no, except for whatever task Jess assigns me on the farm.
Do you enjoy it? Do you find it interesting and fascinating?
I do, yeah, and I find it to be a great release from working in the city, inside the hospitals. Being out on the farm is a great release for me.
And with your job, do you find enough time to get out to the farm? And
I do. I have a fairly flexible schedule at this point. I get out there whenever I can.
So, Jessica, what would you like to be doing 10 years from now?
The same thing I'm doing today, farming.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, I love my job. I think it's endlessly fascinating. I get to be an accountant, an educator. I get to be a mechanic, an agronomist. It's a fantastic career.
Well, congratulations to you, Jessica Niederer, the outstanding young farmer of 2016. We go coast to coast for our next outstanding young farmer of 2016 as we go from the state of New Jersey to the state of Washington and congratulate Nate Youngquist, outstanding young farmer. Tell me how it all started and what you're doing currently.
Well, it all started growing up on a farm and with my parents, following them around, watching every move that they did, hopping on a tractor when I was young, trying to teach myself everything I could. When I was 22, I decided to start my own business. I grow strawberries, raspberries, blackberries, blueberries, pumpkins, and sweet corn. My business is called Sky Harvest Produce. We currently grow 120 acres of certified organic, 130 acres of conventional. We also do custom farming.
And where do you market? How do you sell all this?
We go to 25 farmers markets, and we also direct deliver to about 25 grocery stores, and we also sell wholesale.
How did you develop that network of outlets?
You know, it started my first sale. I planted my first half acre of strawberries was my first year. I planted it, picked it, went into the local grocery store, and was like, "Will you buy my berries?" And he said yes, he would, and it was a slow start, but I slowly, gradually got into the next store that they had. It was a chain store, and then I got in the next store, and then they called a wholesaler and said, "Hey, you got to pick up this guy's fruit," and it's just kind of blossomed from there. Every year, I've grown a little bit more, and I've sold a little bit more, and it's just slowly built up over.
Does it give you the opportunity to educate people what you do?
Yeah, definitely. You know, during the summer, we actually bring kids out to our farm and that haven't ever been out to a farm or had the chance to do that. We let them pick berries, make boxes. You know, we also help with our local food bank and give out food as well.
And then let us meet your guest. She is?
This is my beautiful girlfriend, Brooke Loisel.
How involved are you in agriculture?
A lot of behind the scenes. I serve as a counselor for Nate, helping him with employee decisions and things that he has going on. I do human resources on the side as well. After a long, busy day, 25 farmers markets, there's a lot of money to count. I assist with that. And just, you know, helping out wherever I can, which seems to change every year.
Well, thank you for your contribution. And Nate Youngquist, congratulations on being the 2016 Star Farmer from the state of Washington.
Thank you. It's an honor.
Comes after this count, 3, 2, 1. Indeed, it is an honor to be selected as one of the nation's four outstanding young farmers. We've met two of them. We'll meet the other two a little bit later. But right now, time to talk South America. Here's Max Armstrong with his guest.
Dr. Mike Rodier, the soybean and corn advisor, joining us in the studio this weekend. Well, South America's crops are being combined now. They're getting started, at least, about on pace with a year ago, would you say?
Yeah, Brazil right now is maybe 16, 17, 18% harvested, and that's like 2% ahead of last year. In Argentina, of course, they're not started yet, but Brazil is on its way for a big crop.
A big crop. Now, I saw an estimate, a private estimate, I believe, out of Brazil as high as 102 million metric tons. You're not there, though, are you?
No, I'm at 98 million. I started at 100. We came down a couple million. My concern is there's a lot of beans planted very late in Brazil, in like eastern Mato Grosso, but also in northeastern Brazil. And northeastern Brazil produces about 10% of all Brazil soybeans. And they didn't get planted till like mid-January. And unfortunately, February has been dry. And the forecast looks dry going forward. So I'm still a little bit in doubt about the eastern part of the country.
Going into the Christmas season, we were looking down there and we were thinking, boy, you know, they could have some crop problems. And it appears the farmers of Brazil got quite a Christmas present because weather really turned at about that point.
Well, during November and December, it was really bad. It was very hot, very dry in Mato Grosso. And Mato Grosso is the tropics. And I've been involved in Brazil for over 40 years, and I never saw anything like it. There were some areas of Mato Grosso went 40 days without a rain. And that's just like never seen before. But then right around Christmas, it started to rain. It rained very good in January. So the beans impacted the most with the early maturing beans. The medium and late maturities came along pretty good, and they're going to have a record crop. It just maybe not quite as big as we thought originally.
98 million tons. How does that compare with the United States crop? What do we typically grow in the U.S. in terms of the size of our bean crop? Is it a little more than Brazil?
Well, we had like 103 million last year. So if your upper estimate by some of the people coming true, it'd be like a tie with the United States. But they're not going to be tied for very long. Brazil is going to surpass the United States. It's just a matter of time. They got the area to plant more beans.
Then there's Argentina, coming on strong, it appears.
Argentina farmers are very happy. The weather's been very good. Over 90% of the crops in Argentina, both corn and soybeans, rated good to very good. So weather-wise, it's been very good. And, of course, they got a new administration that is much more friendly towards agriculture.
It's just what they were praying for. I remember those guys down there a year ago when I was down there in the wintertime saying, oh, man, if we could just get our guy elected. And that's what happened.
Yeah, Macri has just been amazing. You know, he dropped all the export taxes for corn and wheat, and he lowered the soybean export tax 5% from 35% down to 30%, and he says he's going to take off 5% every year. Then on top of that, he devalued the peso. So the combination of those two things, corn prices actually doubled in Argentina. So next year in Argentina, look for a big increase in corn acres.
Well, as you talk about export taxes, didn't I see that there was a state in Brazil where they're putting them on instead of removing them?
This is very strange. Actually, there's two states in Brazil. Mato Grosso do Sul had an export tax for many years, but it wasn't much of importance. But just now, the state of Goiás is adding an export tax. But what it is there's a circulation tax in Brazil, around 10%. So a product produced in one state, if it goes across the state line, you pay that tax. But soybeans and corn that exported were exempt since the late 1990s. But this state now removed that exemption, so those export products now have to pay that 10% tax. The farmers are up in arms. So the agricultural groups, because they're afraid it's going to set a trend and other states would follow suit because they need money. The federal government is in dire straits. a very bad recession in Brazil, and I think this is a very bad move on their part, but what can you do?
As good as their crops are down there, they did have a little bit of problem with rust this year, did they not, in Brazil, with soybean rust? Didn't I see in maybe one of your commentaries that the rust was about as bad as it had been in recent years?
Yeah, it's probably the worst in the last 4 or 5 years, not as bad as it was 5, 6, 7 years ago. I would say in localized areas and in certain fields, it is a problem, especially in southern Brazil. They were very wet in Paraná and Rio Grande do Sul. So on the scheme of things, there's maybe 450 cases of rust. No, the worst year at this point, there was maybe 1,800. And the best year, maybe 150, 200. So it's worse than the last couple of years.
But again, the rust is representative of the fact that they had plenty of rain, good crop-producing, yield-building rains.
Yeah, they had a lot of rain in southern Brazil. So this El Nino pattern was, it really lived up to its billing. It was dry in central Brazil, very, very wet in southern Brazil. And now, the last couple of weeks, they've kind of been going back to that dry pattern in central Brazil.
Well, as we look at the calendar, let's see. We'll get into March, and it'll be about time for some kind of a port strike somewhere down there, or a conveyor belt will break in an elevator. We'll get a little bit of excitement in the market over some kind of a transport problem.
You're exactly right. Just this morning, I got some emails asking about a lot of chatter about strikes in South America. And in fact, the unions in Argentina have been talking for weeks that they need a hefty wage increase. Inflation is running around maybe 30% in Argentina. And in Brazil, inflation is over 10%. So both countries, I think, will have probably the most contentious worker labor issues in the last couple of years.
Those are usually short-lived, though. They don't last very long, right? They're 2 or 3 days, maybe a week or so?
Yeah, they don't last very long. With the exception, last year they had a truck driver strike in Brazil. Now, that lasted about 3 weeks. And it didn't impact the grain so much because you can keep your grain in the silo. What it really impacted were the meat packers and the slaughterhouses that had to shut down because they had no cold storage. They couldn't transport anything, and then that backed up into the countryside. They couldn't buy the animals. So it usually has more of a bigger impact on perishable commodities.
I was reading a commentary the other day. I think it was farmfutures.com. They have a gentleman who reports from Brazil on various matters related to agriculture. He was writing about that new Chinese investment railroad where the Chinese have poured money into a major rail line in Brazil. What's the progress report on that, Mike? How far along is it? It really will hold promise for moving a lot of grain for them, correct?
Okay, there's two big projects in Brazil. The one I think holds the most promise is a railroad from central Mato Grosso straight north to the Amazon, actually to a tributary of the Amazon. And that would take grain from Mato Grosso to this tributary. They load it on barges. The barges go up to the mouth of the Amazon. Now, this is called the Northern Arc of Ports. And these ports, about 5 years ago, moved 5% of Brazil's grain products. Last year, it was 20%. And in 5, 6, 7 years from now, it'll be 50%. So these northern ports are really coming on strong. Now, this railroad is still proposed. We'll wait to see, you know, who gets the funding and who builds it. Now, the second one, which is even bigger, is a transcontinental railroad from Rio de Janeiro all the way across Brazil to the Pacific coast in Peru. I don't know if that's ever going to be built. I think they way underestimated the cost. And I don't see too much of advantage because you want to haul something back on your rail. So if you went across from central Brazil to the Pacific coast, yeah, you haul grain, but what you're going to bring back the other way? So I don't know if that's going to go or not. But certainly these railroads up to the Amazon, I think, is a very good investment. It would pay off immediately. And I think they probably will do that one.
Was it Chinese investors that were going to put the money into that? Did I understand that right?
Well, they are talking about making the investment. I don't know if it's been nailed down as of yet. The problem with the Chinese investments are they want to build a railroad and then operate the railroad. And the Brazilian government says, yeah, we'll let you build it, but we want to operate it. So they still have that negotiation to go through.
But this comes to mind as I was looking at video this week of repair work going on the lock facility at Fulton, Illinois. That lock on the Mississippi is shut down. They've drained all of the water out of there. You can actually see the bottom of the riverbed as they're trying to patch up that lock that, well, is probably close to 80 years old. They even caulk the cracks in it is one thing that they do. And here we are holding together our lock system with Band-Aids when we've talked for years about the need to have bigger, you know, newer replacement facilities, and we just keep, I hate to use that well-worn expression, kicking the can on down the road.
Well, that's certainly been a trend in recent years and decades. And I think we kind of let that happen because we didn't have the major strong competitors. Now we do. You know, Brazil and Argentina, South America in general, are way ahead of us in soybean production. They're not going to catch up to us in corn production anytime soon, but they're now a strong corn exporter as well. Brazil is the second biggest exporter of corn in the world. So we got strong competitors, and with the changes in Argentina, much more favorable to agriculture, it's a new day in Argentina. 5 years from now, we're going to be marveling at how much Argentina is exporting. Brazil is putting in some investments in infrastructure, could be a lot more, but they're moving forwards, and we seem to be sort of a running in place.
The always interesting observations of agriculture in South America from Dr. Mike Cordonier. You'll find him on the internet, Soybeans and Corn. Coming up with where we'll start grain and livestock prices next week when we continue on The Market, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Time to meet the other two outstanding young farmers of the United States for 2016. And we go to the state of North Dakota to say welcome to Kevin and Jennifer Wolski. Congratulations. And let's begin by finding out how it started and what you're doing today.
I'm a third generation family farmer. My grandfather had started the farm that I'm on. And then my father took it over. And I wanted to do it ever since I've been little. My mother and father weren't so sure. My mother told me I had to go get a college education before she'd let me come home and farm.
And so what do you produce?
We produce corn, wheat, soybeans, edible beans, black turtles. We have produced field peas, canola, flax, buckwheat, all of the above.
I recently addressed the Northern Pulse Growers in Minot, North Dakota. Can you, in 10 seconds, tell me, what is a pulse?
What is a pulse? A pulse crop is a field pea.
Okay.
Yep. No. So good for split pea soup.
And Jennifer, you have a full-time job raising a family. Tell me about that.
Yes. My role on the farm is a CFO. Kevin likes to call me the chief financial officer.
That's good.
But I call myself the chief family organizer. So.
And how many children?
We have 8 kids, ranging from 15 to 3. And so with 8 kids in 12 years, we are actually still in the baby diaper change.
Wow, that has got to be a time and a half full-time job, really.
It sure is.
Do you get involved in 4-H and other activities for the youngsters?
We are involved in the FFA program
in
the school, as well as many other activities ranging from sports to band and choir and
did you grow up on a farm?
I actually grew up in a small town of Kinder, North Dakota.
Oh, yeah.
So a farming community. Okay. We weren't farmers. And my plan was to be a travel agent until I met a farmer.
And now you got to travel to Cincinnati.
That's right.
Be an outstanding young farmer. Kevin, where do you want to be 10 years from now?
10 years from now? As ag goes up, down, sustainability is going to be the key, you know. But I still think there's opportunities. I'm very optimistic. So hopefully along the way there'll be some opportunities to, expand or broaden into different markets and, farming is quite the adventure.
I'm sure you find it that way, and thanks for doing it.
Thank you.
The outstanding young farmers from North Dakota. That's Kevin and Jennifer Wolski. Well, we have pretty well covered the country in our four outstanding young farmers for 2016, because we go from the Plain States to Connecticut. And there we salute Joseph and Ida DeFrancisco. Congratulations. And Joe, tell me how it all started for you and what you're producing today.
Well, it started back when I was 5 years old. My grandfather wanted me to do something, so we took over my grandmother's flower bed and planted all parsley, and we sold it to local restaurants, and that's where I got the knack of doing the farming from, you know.
And where has that taken you? What are you doing today?
So after that, they gave me cherry tomatoes, and we picked cherry tomatoes, and I'm like, you couldn't get me to pick cherry tomatoes anymore because it's time consuming and stuff. So nowadays, I'm there doing the farm, and we do about 140 acres of any kind of vegetable that will grow in Connecticut, because we do a CSA, Community Supported Agriculture, everyone comes every week to pick up a box, and they want variety. So when my father and my grandfather did the farm, we only did the basics, tomatoes, peppers, eggplants, and squash. But now we do, like I said, you name it, we'll try to grow it, and if it doesn't grow, we change and find something else the next year.
And you're in a heavily populated area, so I'll bet you communicate with city folks a great deal.
Yes. I'm always trying to communicate with the local people, teach them, locally grown, and vegetables, where they're coming from, and what you're doing with them. And she even gives people recipes on how do you cook fresh vegetables, because people are so used to process stuff now.
Right. So, Ida, you involved in the farm? Is there a family?
Oh, the family. We have a 7-year-old and a 9-year-old that you'll find quite frequently on the farm, right next to Grandpa and Dad, and the three other brothers and some other spouses sprinkled in, and the grandparents are still there every Saturday packing vegetables and running around. It's a pretty good life there.
And your involvement throughout the week would be what?
Throughout 7 days a week, we're doing farm work here. So I do the farm stand up in Wallingford, and I really close that gap between the farm and the consumers when they're coming in to learn why I should eat local, why I should eat something that's grown carefully and with a lot of love, and really trying to close that the farm is where your food's coming from.
Do you think they walk away with a little better understanding?
Absolutely, and yeah. They come back year after year and tell me that they love my farmer, and they love our farmer. So,
is that what you call it, the farmer?
Well, we call it the Farmer Joe's Gardens, and I actually have little bumper stickers that we stick on people's cars saying, I love my farmer, and follow me to Farmer Joe's.
Where do you want to be 10 years from now, Joe?
Well, I would love what I am doing right now. Always on the farm. But I'd love to get around and teach people about farming too. So,
good.
A little bit more onto, besides being on the farm, being able to travel and tell people, about farming.
Keep on doing it, and congratulations. Our fourth and final outstanding young farmer of 2016, Joe and Ida DeFrancisco. Again, congratulations to the nation's four outstanding young farmers. A quick look at where we start trading on Monday morning in the grain market. March wheat will start at 461¾ a bushel after losing a penny today. March corn will start the week at $3.65 after gaining a penny. And December corn gained half a cent today to end at $3.86¼. The March soybean market unchanged. The July bean market down 1¼, and it'll start at $8.85¼. Livestock trade, we start Monday with April live hogs at $68.95 a hundredweight after dropping $1.82 today. April live cattle start the week at $134.40, and the April feeder cattle contract starts the week at $154.75. Cattle on feed report issued this afternoon, no surprise at all. Pretty much in line with what traders were expecting. That's our time. Along with Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson on the market, sponsored by the CME Group.